It's the Last Call Podcast. Another great week. How about that? And I will, of course, be around for another 4 days this week. Also on the America Out Loud Network at 7 p.m. You can go find Unleashed, where I host it on Mondays. And then you have four other brilliant hosts that take over the show for the rest of the week. And that will occur for me every single Monday at 7 p.m. Once again, that's the America Out Loud Network. The show's name is Unleashed. So, something popped up into my head. It has to do a little bit with metaphysics and the book of Enoch in a way that I'm not sure many people quite understand. So there was this, I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole, you know, the whole super soldier kind of deal, if you're into that kind of thing, and what the doom and gloom situation is like here on Earth through a couple of supposed whistleblowers and all this. And they made one reference, and that reference was that they were trying to flood the planet. And the way they were trying to do it was to drill way down into the Earth's crust. What are they trying to find down there? Well, they're trying to find what they call primary water. What's primary water? It's essentially oceans of water beneath the crust of the Earth. In other words, you're looking at an untapped resource for fresh and clean water down in the Earth, and it is unlimited. So whenever you see these World Economic Forum types saying that, oh yes, water is a very, very finite resource, and it's all poisoned, and we're never going to have another source for it, that is completely wrong. Look up primary water. Now, they were saying that in this channeling, they were saying that this primary water drilling technique they were trying to use was there to depopulate the planet. How? They wanted to drill so far down that it would cause the hole to actually flood, and it would have an uncontrollable burst of water, particularly in the southern hemisphere, because they feel as though that those locations, like South America, Africa, Australia, and all that, their populations are growing too quickly, whilst the West's populations are, in fact, in check, if not declining overall, including China and all the rest. Kind of makes sense overall if you're going down that deep rabbit hole, but in the Book of Enoch, E-N-O-C-H, or Enoch, depending upon who you speak to, because no matter who you talk to about this book, they'll always correct you, and it will always be the opposite pronunciation. So it's incredibly infuriating. So in the, this is what Blavatsky has to say about this too. So in the Book of Enoch, a solar year consisted of 364 days, periods of 3, 5, and 8 years, followed by 4 supplementary days. It is to suppose that the author expounds some fanciful system which may have existed before the order of nature had been altered at the period of the universal deluge. So we all know about the deluge. That's where we get Noah's Ark from and countless other mythologies and stories in countless other cultures all across the planet. They all talk about a deluge and how humanity was already existing and it needed to repopulate the globe once the deluge was over with. So they're talking about that. Then they also say in the Book of Enoch, the sun, the moon, and those which conduct the stars in heaven was shown to him, which caused all their operations, seasons, and arrivals to return. In the days of sinners, the years shall be shortened. Doesn't that make a lot of sense? The moon will change its laws, and so forth. Deluged that carried away the Atlanteans, Blavatsky says, and changed the face of the whole earth because the earth became inclined. In other words, we saw a massive pole shift in all of this. And in Norse mythology, they say before the actual orders of things, so once again, before the deluge, the sun arose in the south and is placing the frigid zone in the east, whereas now it is in the north. So you're talking about a 90 degree flip, right, in the poles, in the weather, and where the North Pole would be or should be, right, is really coming from what today's version of the East is. Makes a lot of sense. It starts to suddenly piece together how we ended up here, what's going on with all of this. And then I'm reminded of, I believe it was Dolores Cannon. If you don't know who she is, look her up. She's pretty famous now. I I actually read all of her stuff before she was famous and before it went viral. Great hypnotherapist, did a lot of work. You can find a great series of books called The Convoluted Universe. I've read all of them. I think there are six of them. So you may want to look into that. Great stuff. I believe it was in one of her books where she references the Atlanteans drilling into the Earth using some of their technology and flooding the Earth. That's one of the reasons why parts of Atlantis submerged the way it did. And that also comes into the fact that we're now seeing more and more people interested in the deluge, interested in stories about Lemuria and Atlantis, and so on and so forth. If you go down the reincarnation route, all of this starts to make sense as well, because you have a lot of people that more than likely experienced some of those final days of Atlantis. They're here now, and they're suddenly saying, hey, wait a minute, we've been here before. What is really going on here? So this is a bit of a rambling, meandering thought that I had, and we're all on the same page about a lot of things, and we're also capable of critical thought, and we're also probably a bunch of metaphysicists, especially since you're listening to me. So that's something, food for thought. Look out for some of this stuff. I tried to look up some stories about drilling for primary water. Didn't really find a lot of it. I even looked up through DARPA and NIH and so on, but I didn't really find anything. It looks like a lot of it has been covered up and just basically memory hold in all of that. So very, very, very interesting if you do some rabbit hole digging. Okay, so moving right along, NPR. I brought this up, I believe, last week. 87 of the board members in the Washington, D.C. office of NPR are Democrats. How many other board members are there? Well, zero. So that means 100% of the editorial board for NPR is, in fact, Democrat. And do you think for a second that this is not going to be a problem in the way it reports any news or anything about Donald Trump? Of course it's going to be a problem. It was always meant to be a problem. And the people in NPR do not see this as a problem. They, in fact, see this as a good thing, because all of these meandering morons insist that they are there to uphold democracy and fight back against fascism, even though these people are dyed-in-the-wool leftists and Bolshevists. They now have a new CEO, Catherine Maher, M-A-H-E-R. So she is just one of these idiots. Of course, she's got a picture of herself in a white hat that says Biden president with a mask on. Why wouldn't this idiot have a mask on? And, well, it's becoming extremely embarrassing. Jonathan Turley wrote in a memo on Friday, Maher told the staff that Berliner was the one that spilled the beans on how monotheistic NPR's opinions are being disguised as actual stories, attacked not only the quality of the editorial process and the integrity of our journalists, but our people on the basis of who we are. Yes, you're all biased Democrats that will do anything in your power to go against Trump and to support Biden, a decrepit dotard, a mental invalid. Maher's response was hardly surprising, he says. She's a controversial hire at NPR. Many had hoped NPR would seek a better CEO, but that's not the case. So what did she say? Well, she has tweeted out things in the past like, lots of jokes about leaving the U.S., and I get it. But as someone with cis white mobility privilege, I'm thinking I'm staying and investing in ridding ourselves of this specter of tyranny. Oh, really, Ms. Maher? Please, do us the favor and effing leave. Nobody wants you here. Nobody wants to see you get hurt, but nobody wants to hear from you. Then we also have that she is saying that America, now this is a quote, is addicted to white supremacy. Oh, yes, that's exactly it. That's rich coming from a cis white woman. She tweeted out, I mean, sure, looting is counterproductive. I guess she's talking about riots here. But it's hard to be mad about protests not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression founded on treating people's ancestors as private property. Oh, boy, I can't wait to hear what NPR shovels out throughout 2024. I do wish Hillary, this is another quote, this is great, wouldn't use the language of quote-unquote boy and girl. It's a racing language for non-binary people. Oh, this is just fantastic, don't you think? I mean, come on. She is an idiot. Then she's railing against the airlines. Airline business class demographics are such a pet peeve of mine. In the lounge and on the plane, usually there are at least 80% white males. Okay, so here's the problem with her. She's in a lounge. That means that she belongs to a demographic that has such a massive amount of income, and she's willing to pay the annual fees to have access to the lounge, that she is in a different class of society altogether. If she were to step out of the lounge, out from her ivory tower, her lofty throne, she would probably see a very, very large mixture of genders and also races that happen to take flights. Maybe she's flying coach. And she would have none of her bias confirmed where 80% of men or travelers are male and white. I mean, this person is so far removed from everything on the planet that she should be nowhere near a microphone, or she should be outright removed altogether from having any say in what NPR does, because NPR is supposed to be one of those places where we get unbiased news. But of course we know. I mean, ever since Trump came around, then we had the COVID mandates and the vaccine mandates, NPR was on board 100% without any criticism of any policy that came out from the Democrat side. It is really, really sad that we have to deal with this stuff. And then does everybody remember Claudine Gay? She was the one from Harvard that decided to plagiarize her way, not only through college, but also her career. She was forced to step down. In fact, she probably wrote a letter saying that I'm going to step down in the light of controversy. But in fact, somebody strong-armed her to do so. She did not lose a penny of her $900,000 salary. She has now been pushed up, and she will be teaching an ethics class. An ethics class on reading and research. Now, are you serious? Why would Harvard ever do something like this? This woman plagiarized everything she ever did. And now Harvard is going to place her in an ethics class? I mean, come on. I mean, you can't. This is outrageous. How could anybody take Harvard seriously going forward? It is so stupid that these people, one, they can't admit that they made a massive mistake. Two, that they probably turned a blind eye to this person's career just so that they can make some kind of quota. Yes, there are quotas, I'm sorry to tell you, in there based upon gender and race, and they're doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on supporting this person. Why can't they just say, hey, you know what, we effed up because we wanted the cash to make this kind of hire and to have a certain percentage of our professors and faculty be of a certain gender and certain race. That's where all this comes from, right? It's not because, oh, they just want to give a poor person a leg up in society and give that man or woman a chance. No. It's got to do with money. It's all got to do with money. So anyway, moving quite quickly, and I may just leave you with this. We now have the Iranians attacking Israel. Why? Because Israel attacked a location in Syria, and they killed one of the Iranians. I mean, we had a lot of conjecture out there about what really happened. Now, here's the thing. Quite a few things about this. Okay, so the official tally, Iran sent 170 drones, 120 ballistic missiles, 30 cruise missiles over into Israel. The whole rhetoric out there is saying that Israel and its allies shot down 99% of these munitions. So that would be that only 3, because 3% of 3, 1% of 300 is 3, made it through the Iron Dome. So here's my problem with this. We saw on social media plenty of missiles hitting, and there were more than 3 of them. So that 99% number is a lie. 2, Israel and the United States and the rest of the region, they had about 5 days to prepare for this attack. Iran couldn't lose face, so they had to do something, even if it was Pyrrhic, just to show that they had some kind of teeth in all this, right? They couldn't just let it go. Okay, so they all have 5 days to prepare for this. So, of course, they're going to shoot down something along the lines of 99% of the munitions. Now, the other wrinkle to all of this is that you had other allies shooting down this stuff, whether it was the United States, we found out Saudi Arabia played a part, and also Jordan played a part in all that. So you have that. Then there was the bizarre videos that showed things breaking through the atmosphere. A lot of people say, oh my gosh, Iran was actually sending missiles through the atmosphere to attack Israel. Kind of looked like all of those videos and all those pictures that you see when SpaceX launches a rocket and it bursts through the atmosphere. It almost looks like ripples through water. There were supposedly videos of that kind of event occurring during this missile strike. But I will say no, that's probably not the case. It's not Iran sending missiles through the atmosphere up and over and into Israel. It is, in fact, a space-based anti-missile system, anti-drone system that somebody, either Israel, the United States, or Saudi Arabia, one of those people or one of those countries, they're operating this kind of system. So this kind of system notices the missiles and drones. It is above the atmosphere. It shoots down into the atmosphere and intercepts all of it. So that's more than likely what's going on here. So we're entering a new space, literally and figuratively, in military hardware. No, it's not new. It's now just being made public. The other problem I have with all of this is that Israel and the United States and everybody, they all knew about this stuff. They all had 5 days to prepare for it. The Iron Dome and all the other allies, they intercepted the whole lot of it, and only a few of them got through. They somehow can detect all of this, but Israel cannot detect a whole bunch of paragliders coming across the Palestinian border on October 7th. I mean, I brought up that little problem with the narrative many, many times. Now, here's something else that we need to keep in mind. They, if they really wanted to, Iran and potentially Russia and China, they could really put the United States and the West in a really big financial hole. Why? If you look at the data, you find out that it cost Israel over $1 billion to intercept all of these missiles. Iran of 2024 is not the Iran of 2001. That means that they have a lot more missiles to shoot, a lot more drones to send over, and they are probably the owner of the largest missile arsenal in the Middle East. That's a big deal. If they decide to do, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 more times, that's $1 billion per raid. It's $1 billion per probe. Do you think that the United States can support something like that? Because where do you think Israel is getting the money from? It's getting it from the United States. So they could really push this. Factor in the Ukraine. Factor in how oil prices are probably going to be volatile if Israel and Iran continue along with this tit-for-tat process here. Think about it in this way, too. Let's just say there is more volatility here in the energy markets, which we're probably going to see shortly. Here's the problem, or here's how NATO gets fractured, I should say. Somebody blew up Nord Stream 2 way back when, the United States, and nobody knows who did it. Nobody knows who did it. But this forces the EU to do two things, either buy energy from the United States at a premium or continue to buy Russian energy through middlemen also at a premium. This puts the EU development, industry-wise, in serious hock. Germany, I can promise you, is not very happy about the whole prospect. So this is where NATO and the EU start to fracture and become independent from the yoke of the United States. By having volatility in the markets due to Iran and Israel, Germany could potentially push back against the United States and say, guys, it's been fun, but we need to really solve this energy problem. We're not going to continue to buy this stuff from the United States. We're not going to continue to use these middlemen. We are done footing the bill for your little escapades in Eastern Europe. So this would probably push places like France, Italy, Germany, the rest of Europe, maybe not the UK, but the rest of Europe, to recount their efforts to start negotiating with Russia again and getting energy directly from them. This would also force Ukraine to the bargaining table and force them to stop accepting all of these weapons systems to supposedly defend against the Russian fascists. This will ultimately allow the United States to get itself removed from the Ukraine, allows NATO and the EU to get itself removed from the Ukraine, start the peace process there, either willfully or otherwise, and shift focus over to Iran and China, because the United States and the EU, you see it, they are starting to spend a lot less on Zelensky because they know the game is over. They know they can't win against Russia. Russia is just outproducing them, outgunning them. They've got a lot more missiles. They've got a lot more technology, a lot of it which the United States and NATO didn't really understand that they had the capability of producing in such numbers. And they don't want to spend more money in this case. So look for that kind of development. You're probably going to see that over the next 8 months or so, because I can't see this dragging on even further. Okay, that's it. I am out of here. Another podcast week fulfilled by me, your lovable fuzzball host, Chris Michaels. As always, I appreciate the likes and the shares and so on and so forth. I am extremely gracious to allow me to ramble on a little bit about metaphysics, but I will be back as always with more current events. As always, do not forget to go over to America Out Loud and listen to Unleashed. Get those numbers up. And do not forget to listen to also Greg Bolden on the America Out Loud Network as well. I'll be back tomorrow. Gird your loins, as always, for another riveting week.